let's generate a motivation of compassion so that our spiritual practice is done not only for our own sake, but with a sense of compassion and love for all sentient beings who are all like us and wanting happiness and not suffering. And in that way, through listening and sharing in the Buddha's teachings today, let's make a positive contribution to society and to work for the long-term welfare of all beings. Okay, so we've been looking at this book, An Open-Hearted Life, for some time now, going through one chapter each month, speeding along. But the benefit of doing just one chapter a month is that you have a whole month to integrate it into your experience before you come for another dose. And the teachings in this book are very much applicable to our daily life, and we should use them to in our life to help us. So last time, I think we talked about equanimity, didn't we? Now we're on 25. Okay. Equalizing and exchanging self with others. So in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, we have two ways of generating compassion and the altruistic intention. So one way is called the seven-point cause and effect instruction, and we talked about that before. And that depends on really seeing all beings as having been our parents and our kindness and repaying that. And the second method is called equalizing and exchanging self and others. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And so this approaches generating compassion in a slightly different way by pointing out to us the defects of our self-centered mind and the benefits of cherishing others. Okay, so our self-centered mind may get a little bit defensive. Yeah. Okay, so let me just see. Okay, the second method for cultivating the altruistic intention. Don't touch it. The aspiration to abandon all our faults and develop our excellent qualities fully in order to be of the greatest benefit to others. So that's what we mean by the altruistic intention. So the second method to generate that is by equalizing and exchanging ourselves and others. So equalizing ourselves and others involves recognizing that our wish for joy and freedom from misery is just as strong and equally important as others' wish to have joy and be free of misery. And exchanging self and others means that we stop focusing on only ourselves and exchange that narrow perspective for one that centers on the welfare of others. So as with the seven-point instruction of cause and effect, equalizing and exchanging self and others begins with cultivating equanimity, freeing ourselves from attachment, anger, and apathy towards others. Okay, as long as our mind is very biased towards other beings, holding some of them close because we're attached to them, pushing some of them away because we don't like them or fear them, and ignoring everybody else, as long as we have that kind of biased, unlevel mind, it's very difficult to concentrate love, to cultivate love and compassion that we spread towards all beings, because our love and compassion will be biased towards the people that we think are on our side and forget it about the people who we don't like and everybody else. Okay. So we first work on reducing the attachment to dear ones and the hostility towards people that we don't like or who threaten us or who don't agree with our ideas. And then apathy towards everybody else who we kind of regard as just, you know, things on the street that we have to navigate around to get where we're going. And other people aren't things on the street that we have to navigate around. They're living beings just like us who have feelings. Okay? So opening ourselves up to that. In addition, generating unbiased love and compassion will be difficult unless we can overcome or at least lessen our attachment to dear ones, our animosity towards those we don't like, and our apathy for strangers. In addition, the love and compassion that we have for our dear ones is not stable, and when they act in a way that displeases us, our love and compassion vanish, don't they? So I love you, I have compassion for you, as long as you're nice to me. When you stop being nice to me, then my feeling towards you changes. And when you're mean to me, it really changes. And forget about wishing you happiness and freedom from suffering. If you're mean to me, you know, I want you to get hit by a truck ASAP. You know, it brings out the best side of us, you know? I mean, this is what anger and hostility do. They make us have this kind of really horrible kind of vengeful mind. Yeah, so we need to smooth this out and not be so moody. Anybody here moody? Yeah. So this second method has several steps. Equalizing self and others, that's how we start out. Then seeing the defects of self-centeredness and the advantages of cherishing others. Then exchanging self and others. And then finally taking and giving. To equalize, we'll start with the first one. To equalize ourselves and others, we contemplate that we are all the same in terms of wanting happiness and not suffering. This point has been mentioned before, and in fact, we knew it already. I think everybody kind of knows that at some level. It doesn't require rocket science to know this. And unfortunately, some rocket scientists don't know it, you know. But I think if we all look deeply inside of ourselves, there is a feeling that, you know, we're all very similar in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. Yeah. Okay, so this point has been mentioned before, and in fact, we knew it already, but it is easy to forget. We have to bring it into our hearts. To do this, begin by getting in touch with your own wish to be happy and to avoid misery and pain. Yeah. So really, you know, we need to get in touch with that inside our own heart. We have that feeling. I mean, in fact, that's the most important thing in our life, isn't it? To be relaxed and happy and safe and avoid pain and misery. Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do every day. And that's what every living being is trying to do every day. Now, granted, other living beings, and sometimes us too, believe it or not, do really stupid things in our effort to be happy and avoid suffering. Yeah. So, but that doesn't mean just because we're confused about what causes happiness and what causes suffering doesn't mean that we're bad people. It just means we're confused. And it's helpful to remember that animals, too, just want happiness and not suffering. Yeah. So that's easy to recognize about our pets, isn't it? You know, of course we can see they want happiness and not suffering. And we pamper them beyond belief. Yeah. Our pets in this country have it much better than human beings in many other countries. Yeah. But so do insects. Yeah. And so do the animals that we don't see as pets. Okay. So it's, you know, when you look at insects, for example, you can tell that they want to be happy. They don't want to suffer. If we touch them, they run away. You know, they hide. Snails draw inside. You know, spiders run for the nearest crack or crevice to hide in. But, you know, in terms of being living beings, it doesn't matter what kind of body we have. That wish for happiness and not suffering is the same. So that's why when we see bugs, we usually put a jar over them and a piece of cardboard or paper under the jar, and we take them outside instead of smash them. Okay. So really feel that wish for happiness and to avoid misery and pain. Feel that in your own heart. Then bring to mind a variety of people you know, as well as some strangers. Okay, so it's easy to do when you think of your friends and dear ones. They want happiness and not suffering. What about your boss? Yeah? Did you ever think that your boss wants happiness and not suffering? When I go teach in Singapore, people there complain so much about their bosses. Yeah. So it's not that I think bosses are necessarily great, but, you know, they're like everybody else. Yeah. And then they have to deal with all these employees who are complaining about them. Yeah. And the employees have to deal with the boss complaining around about them. So everybody's equal. Yeah. And so, you know, it really changes. You know, if you think of politicians that you really don't like, you know, their views, their actions, and then you think, but they're just living beings who want to be happy and not suffer. Yeah, that's all they are. Now, then it helps us to see them in a different light. We don't get so upset and so aggravated by what they're doing. And then we can talk about policies without criticizing people. Okay, so bring to mind a variety of people you know as well as some strangers. Recognize that although each of them may want something different that will bring them happiness, they are all alike in wanting happiness. To give a superficial example, one person may like noodles and another rice, but they are all the same in wanting to eat and be nourished. Similarly, each person may have different unpleasant situations or sufferings he or she wants to be free from, but we are alike in wanting to avoid misery. One person may suffer from bad health, another from losing his or her job, a third from a breakup, and a fourth from feeling unconnected to their spiritual practice. But they're all the same in wanting to be free from their difficulties. It's true, isn't it? Yeah. In addition, we are all exactly like each of them in this regard, wanting happiness and not suffering. There is no reason why our happiness is more or less important, or our misery more or less undesirable than that of anybody else. We are the same. Okay? So, you know, it's interesting to think about that in terms of us living our lives, and then think of people who are wealthy, who also have problems. Think of the children in cages at the border, wanting happiness and not suffering. You know, think of people seeking asylum in this country. Think of people not wanting to give them asylum. They're all wanting happiness and not suffering. Okay, so it's important to recognize that. And although we may disagree with different beings' ways of getting happiness and avoiding suffering, everybody wants that. Okay? So I don't think we can, you know, whatever side we are on things, you know, we can't just look at one side and say, well, those people are worthwhile, but these people aren't. You know, I mean, how are you going to look at a kid who, you know, or a family that is fleeing violence and say they don't matter? Yeah, I mean, we can't do that. Especially when, I don't know about you, but I think most of our families that immigrated to this country came because they were fleeing from something. Yeah. Something wasn't going right. They're looking for a better life. Similarly, each person may have different unpleasant situations or sufferings he or she wants to be free from, but we are all alike in wanting to avoid misery. One person may suffer from bad health. I read that already, didn't I? It's okay to say it again, because we forget. Yeah, we hear it and we go, oh yeah, that's really true. And then the next moment, it's, but my happiness is more important. And they don't deserve happiness as much as I do. Yeah. And then we give our reasons for why we're more important than anybody else. But of course, other people look at us and give reasons why they are more important than us. So who's right and who's wrong? And, you know, can we really prove that we're more important than anybody else? Regard each of the people you have imagined in front of you one by one and reflect, this person wants happiness as intensely as I do. Do this repeatedly, looking at each individual, and let this universal truth come into your heart. So this is a good meditation practice to do. Just imagine different people in front of you. And then one by one, you know, think this about each person. Observe the change that happens in your mind and focus on the feeling that arises. You know, because the fact of the matter is, when we can open our heart towards others, we feel better. When we are beset by anxiety and fear and I have to defend myself because something bad may happen, even nothing bad is happening, that mental state itself is a mental state of suffering, isn't it? Yeah. when we're angry. Anybody happy here when they're angry? No. Anybody happy when they're feeling defensive? No, we're not. So these mental states where we close our heart and say, I'm more important and I'm going to defend myself. You know, these are not relaxed, happy, joyful mental states. Yeah. When we build ourselves a wall, build a wall around ourselves to protect us, or we build a wall around our country to protect us, are we happy, relaxed? So add more and more people as you gain experience in this meditation. You know, keep adding people. Okay, so since I, and here I refers to me, not my co-author, Russell Coltz, who's a professor at Eastern. So since I travel a lot, I do this contemplation in airports. Really good to do in airports, you know, especially when your flights are delayed. Yeah, especially when you're trying to get on a flight and you're last in line and they're calling everybody else to give them a seat and you wonder, are they going to call me? Then you remember, well, everybody wants happiness, including me. All these people want to get on the flight just like me. Maybe I won't get that seat, you know, but somebody else will and they'll get it. They'll be happy. I practiced this just recently, actually, because I was taking an international flight that was delayed, so I missed my connecting flight, you know, waiting at the gate. And they told me, doesn't look good. There's 13 people ahead of you and the flight's full. And it's like, but I'm jet lagged. I want to go home. You know, and they don't care. yeah. But actually, the guy at the gate, he was really good. He was doing his best. So I watched him call each person, you know. Like, am I going to get on the flight? And at the end, I got on. I was the last one. And there was nobody behind me, you know. So he got everybody on the flight. But it's a good practice, you know. Oh, yeah, they all want seats. And they're all going to be happy if they get the seats, you know. And even if they can't get everybody on the plane and some people are left off, it might as well be me. We're all equal in that respect. Except I'm jet-lagged. Well, too bad, children, you know. Yeah. Take out your tissues and cry, but you're not going to get much sympathy. Okay, so sitting in a traffic jam, waiting in line at the grocery store, or being in any place with a number of people will work just as well, you know. Look at the people around you and think, they want to be happy and avoid suffering as much as I do. Let that sink in. That young person who looks like he's on drugs, the elderly woman with a cane, the single mom with a sleeping baby and a screaming toddler, the man in a suit with a mark on his trousers, the young war veteran in a wheelchair, the Pakistani immigrant and his friend, a Danish immigrant, the middle-aged man anxiously looking at his watch, the Muslim woman with a hair scarf talking to the Jewish woman with a hair scarf, the teenager whose thumbs are working overtime texting, the woman wearing a political campaign badge, all of them are just like me, wanting to be happy and not suffer. there's no difference amongst us. What valid reason is there for putting myself first or for caring about the well-being of some other people and not others? Okay. So this is, you know, when you really think about it, because we often come back, you know, our instinctive feelings, but me, I'm more important. And then to continually say, but, you know, what valid reason can I give for why I should get this and somebody else shouldn't? So we're not talking about denying ourselves and suffering, you know. We're talking just about being realistic. Yeah. And we believe in democracy in this country, at least theoretically. I don't know what's happening to our democracy nowadays. But theoretically, we believe in it. You know? And so if we have on one side me, and we have on the other side all other living beings beside me, can we really say that one person is more important than all the others? And that one person's happiness only should count, or should always count first, not others? Because the thing is, when we only look out for ourselves and ignore others, we wind up living amongst other people who are very unhappy. When you live in a society with unhappy people, what is that effect on you? Yeah. It affects us if we walk down the street or live in a house or live in a country with people who are unhappy. Yeah. So it behooves us really to take care of others and help them to have a better life. Because when they're happy, we live in a better environment and our own well-being, you know, gets taken care of. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this applies on a personal level. It applies on a national and an international level, too. If we only look out for our group within society and, you know, forget about others, we're going to live in an unhappy country. If we only look out for our country and don't care about other countries, we're going to live in an unhappy world. And all of that influences us. Yeah. So, you know, it makes sense to have a big mind that sees how dependent we are on each other and how interdependent we are. And how, you know, when others benefit, it comes around. Because you just even think economically, and I don't understand all the economic things with the trade war and all this kind of stuff. But I do know that if the U.S. has goods that we want to sell abroad, that the people in other countries have to have the money to buy the things we produce. Yeah. If we don't buy their stuff, then they won't have the money to buy our stuff. Yeah? So then I wonder, well, why do we raise tariffs, which is going to prevent other people from, other nations from getting the money their people need, when it's going to backfire because they won't be able to buy the stuff made by American workers? You know? So just the whole thing doesn't, I can't make sense of it, okay? But, you know, it just seems to me that we live, we're always dependent on other living beings. Always. And we can't just isolate ourselves, either as one human being, you know, or as a group, or as a country, or whatever. Okay, so here's a reflection to work on. Take a few moments in a public space to become aware of the people around you. Shifting your attention away from your own concerns, allow yourself to connect with the understanding that these beings around you have life stories. Yeah. When we look at the whole situation at the border, you know, do we see that these people have life stories? Or do we only see, oh, there's people who want to get into our country? Do we see them as people who have, who have life stories, who have had experiences? Yeah. And that their life stories run every bit as deep as our own do. And that they, like us, are filled with hopes and dreams and aspirations. And they, like us, have their own struggles and challenges. Yeah. Recall that just like you, they wish to be happy and avoid suffering. Allow yourself to experience a sincere wish that they have happiness and that they be free of suffering. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you think of them, that if you think of some politicians on whichever side of the aisle that you don't like, you know, because of what they're saying, think of how those people also want to be happy and not suffer. And you may disagree with how they're going about getting happiness. But, you know, imagine if they were happy and content. That doesn't involve meaning that you imagine they get what they want, because often people don't benefit from getting what they want. You know, if you have somebody who's an alcoholic, you don't give them alcohol and say, oh, well, now I've made them happy. Isn't that great? You know, because that's destroying their life. But in your meditation, you imagine them being satisfied and happy so that they have no thought of wanting alcohol, or that people have no thought of revenge. Okay? And, you know, and that you know, that opens something within us.
Mm-hmm. Well, earlier you said that our personal suffering is the same as others. But sometimes in the prayers they say that other suffering is more important than our own. Mm-hmm. So does it depend on the context, or how do you work with these two different interpretations?
Well, the first one being what?
That our suffering is equal as to others, as in terms of importance. But then in many prayers, they say the suffering of others is more important.
When you follow the Bodhisattva path, we say others' suffering is more important.
But I thought you just said something about, you know, we're all equal in
wanting happiness and not wanting mm-hmm. suffering.
But our suffering is not.
Yeah, okay. But in terms of working to eliminate suffering, yeah, we don't want to neglect ourselves. But if you want to be democratic, who's more important? If somebody has to give something up, who should give it up? If somebody has to get on that plane first, who should get on that plane first? Okay, so we're all equal in wanting to get on the plane. But there's 12 other people in front of me, and then there's me. So, you know, who are we gonna vote for to get on that plane? Well, you people can just hang out here. I'm going on. You know? So, you know, when we say our suffering, you know, everybody is equal in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. That's true. But if we're practicing the Bodhisattva path, when it comes to eliminating suffering and bringing happiness, what we're trying to develop is a mind that cares more about others than about ourselves. Okay? So saying that we're equal in wanting happiness and not suffering is trying to get us to just open our hearts and realize that other people have feelings. And it's not just the people who are dear ones to us who have feelings. Everybody has feelings. Even the bugs. Yeah. But when it comes to, you know, if you're following the Bodhisattva path, then when it comes to really working to benefit others, then we try and put others first. Yeah. As practitioners, we're not always successful. Because what's the thought that comes up all the time? Oh, yes, others are more important than me. They're more numerous than me. But I want this. And I'm more important than everybody else. They can wait. Yeah, when push comes to shove, I mean, all of our beautiful ideology is out the window. Because this self-centeredness is so deep and so entrenched, yeah, that we have to work very, very hard to really see its disadvantages and the benefits of cherishing others and habituate ourselves with that enough so that we can slowly begin to overcome that. Okay? Parents. Okay, how many of you are parents? Okay, so you've all raised babies. When your kid is screaming in the middle of the night, do you feel like getting up and taking care of that kid? No, you want to stay sleeping. Do you get up and take care of the kid? Do you take care of the kid with love? Would you feel worse if you just kept sleeping and let the kid keep crying? Put in some earplugs, close the door, and say, okay, go ahead if you're going to cry. I don't care. I'm going to continue sleeping. How would you feel, you know, doing that? No, you're not going to do that. Okay? So it's like that. It's like that when you, you know, really treasure somebody and see their importance, then, you know, you can very easily overcome the mind that says, but I want to go to sleep, you know, shut up, you brat. You know, you're not seeing your kid as a brat at that moment. You're seeing them as a suffering sentient being, a little baby who's hungry at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, who isn't trying to make mom and dad suffer. They're not trying to make you sleepless. Yeah.
Hi. So I was just going to say, just an add to that, is that we only have control over ourselves. So it really, that's all we have the control of. And also, suffering is a state of mind. So we don't have to suffer. We never have to feel suffering. We choose to feel suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, very often. Pain comes from our body quite naturally. But how we relate to that pain is very much dependent. Well, it's completely dependent on our mind. Yeah. And if we sit there and just, oh, my little toe is killing me. You know, I scratched it. Oh, you know. then we just cause ourselves much more pain.
So I get that. All right, so a person that wants to be happy, doesn't want to suffer, can still create a tremendous amount of suffering. And I'm going to use an extreme example here, like Hitler, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we could say, well, he just wanted to be happy and didn't want to suffer. But in the process, God, look what he did, right? So
yeah.
I get that we can differentiate as Buddhists that his actions were awful, horrible, deplorable, but the human being himself. But still, there's that part. So how would you tell a person who wants, how can you still develop compassion for somebody who committed that amount of suffering?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, how do you reconcile that, those two things of, okay, there's the actions, but it's still, on some level, this is the person who committed those actions.
Yeah. Okay. First, we differentiate the person and the actions. Okay? So, the person has mental states, yeah, in this case, very afflicted mental states, because they're a samsara being. Do we have afflicted mental states? Yeah. But ours aren't as bad as Hitler's. Well, maybe not right now at this moment, but given the right circumstances, do you think we could ever act like that? Do we have so much control over our own mind that if ignorance, greed, anger, vengefulness, pain overwhelmed our mind, that we would still be able to maintain a virtuous state of mind? Do you have that much self-control? That's a question really to ask us ourselves. If I can use another example, if you remember the Rodney King incident, yeah, with the cops down in L.A. who chased Rodney King and then beat him to a pulp. And then afterwards there were the riots in the black community and the Korean grocers. And I mean, all of L.A. was in turmoil. Okay, so I looked at that situation and I thought, you know, if I had been born in Rodney King's family, with his upbringing and so on, and how society relates to an African American, or how police relate to African Americans, I might very well have acted like him. If I had grown up in the families of the white cops, I could very well have thought like them too. If I had been born in the families of the Koreans, I probably would have thought like them too. When I really looked at it, you know, how conditioned we are by our environment, how conditioned we are by also what we're bringing with us from previous lives, I couldn't say that, you know, there's an independent self here who's always going to choose the highway. When I look back on my life, I have not always chosen the virtuous way. On situations much less dire than Hitler, I've chosen the wrong way out of my selfishness. You know, if I were came into life with the karma, you know, the predispositions, the way of thinking that he did. If I was born in the Weimar Republic, you know, after a horrible treaty completely suppressed the, you know, the Germans who lost the First World War, you know, who knows how I might have thought. I'm not saying that that way of thinking is good. I'm saying it's understandable to see how somebody could have thought. thought in that kind of way. And then, of course, done horrible actions. So I'm not saying that the actions are good. I'm not saying the actions, that the mental states that motivated those actions are good. Very clearly, both are non-virtuous. Very clearly. But that doesn't make the person who did them an evil person who's irredeemable, because that person has the Buddha nature. Yeah? And in a different situation, you know, encountering different things in their life, you know, perhaps that Buddha nature could get awakened in the future and they can really turn themselves around. Okay? So you separate the person from their mental states and their actions. Because when you look over a period of time, you can see that a person's mental states are not all exactly the same. And their actions are not always exactly the same. And especially when that time period is from one life to the other, where people can be born in very, very different situations. And we can really see that there's a lot of change that can happen, and that we can't just put people in boxes and sign off on them. Yeah. And I think this has brought a lot of what's disturbing the country right now, is that people put other people in boxes and say anybody who thinks like that doesn't have their head screwed on correctly, and, you know, they're not a human being. Hey, we're all human beings. If we met each other in different situations, yeah. I tell you, if the Martians invaded tomorrow, yeah, forget it, you know, the whole world would be unified. All of our differences we would forget, you know. All you need is a common enemy to forget your own differences. Yeah. Because these things are all so subjective.
Thank you for those insights, very helpful. And I do say that on a daily basis. I do not put people in boxes. I have this dilemma, though. So on one hand, I have a person who gives everything of themselves. I see this. I probably see it in myself as well. Gives up their life for others who never give anything back. Mm-hmm. And they end up giving and giving and giving without anything in return. Of course, I guess from this approach, we could say that they benefit in themselves doing that. Although I often see them giving to people that are insatiable, that never get enough. Mm-hmm. So with this belief of separating, did you say actions from their beliefs? Is that what you said? Mm-hmm. Or actions from their beliefs? So I could say this insatiable, selfish person that mm-hmm. daily thinks of themselves, I could mm-hmm. say, well, they must have been really lacking at some point in their lives. So I could have compassion because, gosh, they have to suffer trying to get the attention and absorb themselves into everything they need and want with disregarding others. I could have compassion and say, I'm sorry that they feel that there's a lack everywhere. On the other hand, I wonder with a person sometimes I call codependent, which is helping someone who is stabbing them in the back. I could say, I have compassion for that person that they give so much for others that they never really acknowledge that they're being stabbed in the back while they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And I could say, what kind of a person, or have compassion for them and say, oh, they don't have something. I don't know, that's confusing to me. But I wondered what you thought
about
that.
Yeah, you can have, in a codependent situation like that, you can have compassion for both parties. That doesn't mean that what both parties are doing is healthy or virtuous. It just means it's understandable and you can have compassion because they're trying to be happy. And neither party is quite sure about what actually creates the causes for happiness. Okay. So being compassionate doesn't mean that you give that you say everything everybody does is okay. And being compassionate doesn't mean you give everybody everything they want. Okay. Being compassionate is, you know, involves wanting them to be happy and trying to help them create the proper causes for happiness instead of to keep creating the causes of suffering, which they think are the causes of happiness. Okay? And so being compassionate can sometimes involve being very, very strong and saying no to somebody. Yeah. I mean, if you have a relative who's alcoholic and always coming to you for money, is it compassionate to give them money? I don't think so. That just reinforces the habit. I think it's more important to say no. And I'll take you to rehab if you want. But if you don't want to go to rehab, I'm not going to support your alcohol problem. Because that's not helping you. Okay, so, you know, together with compassion, we have to have wisdom. You know, what really helps somebody in the long term? Not what satisfies them right now, or what will make them like us. Those two are not good. Should not be our reason. I'm doing this so that they'll like me. I'm doing it so they won't criticize me. I'm doing it to make them happy and get them off my back. Yeah. No, it's like we have to think of what the long-term benefit is for someone. And try and steer them in that direction. And sometimes they don't like us for doing that. But it's like any parent knows, yeah, when you're bringing up a child, do you give your child everything they want? Is it helping your child to give them everything they want? They want 15 ice cream cones? Are you a good mom and a dad for giving them 15 ice cream cones so that then you have an obese child who gets diabetes? Is that being a good parent? Or is it wiser to say no? So we have to think, you know, what does helping somebody else really mean? So you may say no, and your kid may throw a temper tantrum. My parents they took a video, one of those 8mm, you know, old ones, of me when I was, I don't know, 4 or 5, having a temper tantrum. Yeah? Yeah, I should get it for my sister and show it to you someday. Yeah, but, you know, it was okay. I had a temper tantrum. I lived through it, and I realized, you know, there I had a temper tantrum because I couldn't get my skates on properly. Remember when they made those skates that had the little clips that were supposed to go around your feet? And they never stayed on, did they? You know, they're not like the skates that people have nowadays where you put your whole foot in a shoe and it's all attached. We had, you know, the ones where you had to hook it on and they didn't. And I was so frustrated. I threw this temper tantrum and they got out the camera and filled the hole. But, you know, it taught me that, I have to learn how to deal with frustration. and that things are not always going to happen my way. And those are very good things to learn when you're a kid, because you're not going to go through life having everything happen the way you want. So your parents teaching you how to deal with frustration by taking a film of it. No, I'm joking there. But, you know, when your parents teach you that, that's a kindness. Even though at the moment it's like, you know, but I want...